Welcome to Pap Talk, a podcast from Contemporary OBGYN, where we deliver expert insight, commentary, and more on emerging topics and trends to doctors in women's health.
Well, welcome, Gloria. It's wonderful that you've taken your time to chat with me. You know, it's wonderful to connect again with a wonderful friend and colleague, and I know you're doing great work. And I really appreciate the time that you're going to take to talk about this very important topic on prison healthcare and females and their challenges, not only with contraceptive issues, but, you know, challenges in general for the incarcerated patient. I know you've been really involved in some really exciting and new female healthcare initiatives, especially for those who are incarcerated. Can you give me a little background on that and tell me what's been going on?
Michael, before I give you some background, and it's a pleasure to be with you, let me ask a question. And that is, just as all OBGYN clinicians consider blood pressure, weight, pregnancy issues, and social determinants of health among all the other questions that we ask our women patients, how many of us consider whether we're missing a woman who has been previously incarcerated? Do you ask questions of your patients on whether they've been incarcerated in the past?
I will admit that, you know, I have multiple offices, and sometimes that comes up in the forefront, sometimes it doesn't, but we all have preconceived ideas and preconceived notions about it. I know you and I share the background that we both have worked in the prison healthcare system, and to be honest, I think we're remiss. We're not asking the right questions, because we don't understand the relevance.
Exactly. And as background, when we look at the stats, there are about 225,000 women in jails, state prisons, federal prisons, which accounts for about 7% of the federal inmate population. And most of them are in for drug or property offense, so that it's usually not for a murder of someone or something that is more, grievous. But we really aren't addressing the unique issues that women have. And also take into consideration that the majority of those women who are imprisoned are of reproductive age, which is about 3/4 of the women, and 6 to 10% are pregnant when they enter the prison. So the needs of women are really so magnified for those who have been in prison and upon reentry. New Jersey has started a New Jersey Commission on Women's Reentry, and I'm the medical director of this reentry program. And what we're focusing on is the transition, being sure that women in the prison are getting the care that they need, and that we're continuing this care when they are able to enter back into their community. So for the reentry program, it's both care, that's a continuum from prison to reentry, and it's also addressing the stigma of being in prison, the lack of resources that many of these women have when they are back into their community, and they're returning to an environment that may have been the cause of why they were incarcerated. So it's really four-pronged. It's the stigma, it's giving them the resources, it's making sure that they're going into a safe environment. It's also giving them access to health care. So my initiative overall connects persons returning from state prisons, county jails, addiction treatment centers, with the critically needed services that they need. So we service about 12,000 plus participants, and almost 3,000, about 2,700, 2,800 are women. And what we do is we work in partnership with not only the healthcare providers like myself, but with addiction treatment centers, with the federally qualified health centers, and with community behavioral health clinics, so that we basically want to address all of the issues that really make up the equation of wellness in the incarcerated population and in the reentry population. And I just want to add one other aspect of it, that in general, incarcerated women face many more problems, many more health problems than the general population, so that they are at higher risk for medical problems, as well as higher risks of trauma, substance abuse, and domestic abuse. So we really have to look at not only the overall health screening and the women's health screening, as well as the diabetes, hepatitis B and C, but also the sexually transmitted infection, HIV, AIDS, and provide trauma-informed care so that we are really addressing all of their needs. I have, you know, a survey here of 1,000 recently released persons, and they found that 9 in 10 women in these recently released women who were incarcerated suffered from diagnosed health conditions that required active treatment, that they couldn't have a lag time between when they left prison to entering their community. So these are some of the initiatives. These are some of the focuses of what I'm doing now. I'm making sure that we are addressing all of the healthcare needs of the individual, as well as making sure that there is no lapse in her care.
Right. And I know you talked about two main issues, about incarceration and reentry. You know, let's back up. I mean, I think there is a state-by-state directive, you know, about conjugal visits while incarcerated. And, you know, my question is, like, is there any preparation for reentry into society? I mean, how to maintain general and gynecological care after your, you know, the stint in prison or jail or what have you. And, you know, I think one of the big issues is, you know, when I was in working in the prison, we were using a lot of contraceptive medication for accessibility for a lot of variety of conditions. But what about the specific contraceptive needs? Like, let's focus on that, and then we'll springboard to some other gynecological concerns.
Well, to start with the contraceptive needs, I think the first thing that we have to address is that for women in prison, as well as for women on reentry, there should be no provision of permanent contraception. That that's really not the time for women to make that decision on what family planning option is best for her in terms of permanent one. So I think that's one of the highlights. The second is that when we talk about contraception, we also have to bring in the issues that many women need contraceptives for other conditions. For instance, severe pain, dysmenorrhea, or for bleeding issues that they may have. So that there's other reasons that women may need a method of birth control, but not necessarily for birth control, but for some of the other gynecologic conditions that she has or that she reports to us. So I think it's really important to bring that in. And I think the third is, because many of these women are at higher risk for sexually transmitted infection, this is a great time to talk about this aspect of it as well, that we really have to make sure that we're protecting women and telling them that despite the fact that if they're having heterosexual sexuality with a partner or even with homosexual, that they have to be sure that they protect themselves. So that if it's sexual exchange with a man, even if we put them on an oral contraceptive or they're using an IUD, they may still need a method to protect them from sexually transmitted infection, such as a condom. So it's really important that we not only address the full range of contraceptive methods, the pills, the injectable contraceptives, the intrauterine devices, the implants, but also these other areas that impact the woman, not only from the contraceptive, but from her wellness and from sexually transmitted infections. So whenever I talk about contraception with women, either who are still incarcerated or on reentry, I bring up all of these aspects of contraception. And it's not just taking a pill every month if you're in a heterosexual relationship to avoid a pregnancy if you don't want one. But I want to bring up one other important aspect that sometimes we forget when we talk about contraception. And that is, many of these women need preconception counseling so that we can't automatically focus on, well, I'm going to talk about how can we avoid pregnancy. But some of these women may want to become pregnant upon discharge, upon reentry into their community. And so we have to also provide preconception counseling to these individuals. And we have to focus if they're at risk for substance abuse, talking about substance abuse. If we're talking about nutrition, we have to talk about, you know, proper nutrition, folate supplementation, optimizing physical health, optimizing mental health, getting the screening that one needs in order to not only successfully become pregnant, but to successfully carry a pregnancy to term. So it's really a twofold. It's the contraceptive and all of the other aspects that go into that. And it's also preconception counseling and not just assuming that the woman is not interested in pregnancy.
Right. And I think you make a very good point, but I'll just share a little bit of my experience. When I was working in the Northeast in a female prison, we had a lot of substance abuse, and we had a lot of women who were using sex for a variety of different reasons, whether it was for resource or finances. And when they came in, these were grand mal tips, pregnant 10, 12, 15 times, more than 10 children at a time. And many of the opportunities, they were, I think that the system had failed them. They wanted to get permanent sterilization. They didn't want to get pregnant anymore. And even the long-acting reproductive contraceptives have had some challenges. These women were at high risk for STIs. So they were really interested in permanent and irreversible sterilization, which kind of goes against with what you're saying, that it may not be the right time to make that decision. So again, I think, you know, for me, we had to kind of optimize what was going on. And I think for me, and depending on where you are practicing, access and I think continued care is really important, right? So when they are in prison or jail, you have the ability to regulate their pills. They can get a pill on a regular basis. But once they leave, that access to medical care is really challenging, and they may not continue on a contraceptive. So, you know, we developed a paradigm that very often we would, if someone was on a birth control pill, let's say, for instance, while they were incarcerated, then before they left, we would give them an injection, you know, so it would, at least we'd give them 3 months coverage, and then we would try to get them hooked into the system. So, you know, I think there is, you know, points well taken with abnormal bleeding, with other contraceptive benefits. But again, there are preferred methods and there's problems and pitfalls. What are some things that have you've experienced, you know, in terms of seeing those same kind of challenges?
You're absolutely right, Michael, that the biggest challenge from, and I shouldn't say the biggest, it's one of the looming challenges when women are going from prison incarceration to reentry is, do they have health insurance to get the medications that they need? Do they have the finances to buy what they need, even if they are over the counter? So what we're doing in New Jersey with the reentry program is that's why we're meeting with the women before release to prepare an individualized treatment plan that includes exactly what you said, the contraceptive needs, whether the woman has completed her family and does not want to have any more pregnancies in her future, what are the chronic problems that she has, what are the preventive issues that we have to address, what medications does she need, and that we give the medications for as long as this individual needs. We also have a health navigator who was a professional and trained and qualified to serve as the liaison, so that if I, Gloria Bachman, have reentered my community and after 6 weeks I find that I don't have resources to pay for the medications I need, et cetera, that I have someone that I can talk to that will give me the community healthcare access that I need. I think one of the other issues that we haven't addressed yet, Michael, is, and we talked about all of us can be providers of reentry women, is connecting the incarceration record with the reentry record. So that if I'm taking care of someone who has been incarcerated, it's really important that I see what were some of the medical issues and concerns. And I think that's also something that I would like to really emphasize in both statewide and nationally, that we really, I mean, with the woman's permission and with the individual's permission, that the incarceration record should become part of the reentry medical record so that we do have an understanding of some of the health concerns, the addiction issues, whether there was domestic violence, sexual assault, the mental health issues, you know, all the general OBGYN issues, so that we are aware. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to center on one, and I would like to see every region of the country come up with a model that is really uniformly used as a template for all reentry programs. And for us in New Jersey, we have the Francine A. LaFrac Wellness Center. And I believe it's one of a kind because it's exclusively dedicated to court-involved persons, both men and women. And what it does is it offers wellness services. It offers the case management that you spoke about. It offers the critical reentry services. And it's not done in a silo. It's done in partnership with the New Jersey Department of Corrections, the New Jersey State Parole Board, the government, all of us in healthcare, nonprofit partners, et cetera, et cetera. So what we're providing is we're not only providing diagnostic screening, we're also providing the care so that it's not medical only, but it's also dental care. I think another area is nutrition, that with lack of activity for many incarcerated individuals, weight is a problem. And I think it's also overall wellness instruction. How do you stay well? How do you keep well? So every reentry program should have those templates of care, of offerings for the women, so that they can really get to the point where they're well. They're well mentally, emotionally, gynecologically, if they do want to get pregnant, as you said, or if they don't want to, that they have all these resources to do that.
So do you think that should really take part while they're incarcerated, these educational opportunities for people who are incarcerated to learn more about general health and wellness, gynecological and contraceptive care? I mean, you bring up a lot of excellent points about the lack of awareness, the lack of access. I know that, you know, I was very, very challenged when I was a clinician going to the prison on a regular basis, even just getting routine processes approved and being able to get it executed. I mean, a lot of things we take for granted, right? So if we were going to do, if you have a woman in your office at the university where they had an abnormal pap smear, you could schedule a colpo and they would come in and it would be taken care of and it would be no issue. When you have somebody who's incarcerated, they have an abnormal pap, you have to put in an authorization for a visit to a facility that has a colposcope and has somebody trained, and there's transport, and then there's security, and then there has to be this whole approval process. That could take 8 weeks, if not longer. And then you have the delay factor from recognition, right?
Yes.
All the way to execution, and then if you have to do biopsies and what have you, and then recovery. And it's the same kind of thing when I was taking care of pregnant women as well. Transferring them out of the facility is not just like you making an appointment. There's a lot of extra administrative work that has to be done as well. So, you know, I think those things need to be taken into consideration, but access and continued care I think is really important. And I like that integration of, you know, when people get, I think we've had some challenges integrating, you know, people who are formerly incarcerated, even in non-medical situations, you know, to integrate them back into society, to be self-sufficient, contributing members of society and what have you. But again, when it comes to medical care, I'm just thinking, you know, we don't even have it on our, you know, our intake forms, our ACOG intake forms. Have you ever been incarcerated or what have you? I think we are now getting a little bit better in terms of asking issues. But again, I think people come in with preconceived ideas about that as well. And it's not really, unless it's volunteered by the patient, it's not actively pursued by the provider. I'm just thinking in terms of my experience with the residents. Do we ask every person who comes in the same kind of concept, or are we, you know, addressing our inherent biases when someone comes in and has substance abuse or somebody has had domestic violence? Are we having preconceived ideas of who the incarcerated person is? And that affects the way we do our history and physical and what have you. So, you know, I think there's a lot to learn. I know you take care of and you educate your residents about a lot of variety of different aspects. I would ask, are your residents joining you in this experience, or is that something that is available for residents in terms of improving their educational background?
Actually, you're so right in everything you just said, Michael. And Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health is actually now setting up clinics that will serve incarcerated individuals, but they are going to be ambulatory centers that really eliminate the stigma, eliminate the bias that you spoke of, that many times individuals who have been incarcerated confront. And one of the frequent questions that all of us talk about is, if you had been incarcerated for the past 6 months and I said to you, Michael, where have you been these past 6 months? Would you tell me that you were incarcerated? I mean, that's the question that comes up. And we should be able to, if I had been incarcerated for 6 months, I should be able to say, Michael, I've been incarcerated for 6 months, and not have the stigma attached to it that we do. And the other point that you're bringing up is there are no templates of care. It's state-by-state directives for health care. So even though there are organizations like the National Commission on Correctional Health Care, the American Correctional Association, and they have published health care standards and accredit correctional health care systems, the accreditation is totally voluntary. So we don't have one template of care. Now, I know the Federal Bureau of Prisons has the Reentry Services Division, and that has a Women and Special Populations branch. So as you said, we are now beginning to understand that both incarcerated individuals and those on reentry do need specialized services in many instances, and they need trauma-informed care, because being incarcerated is traumatic for anyone. And I know there have been some studies where they've put individuals into a prison system, and even though they knew it was a research protocol, they couldn't tolerate it. They left the study early.
To your knowledge, is there any kind of fellowship training or any kind of specialized medical education that a clinician can take to become, you know, prison health certified, or is it kind of just, you know, learn as you go?
That's actually a great initiative. I'm not aware of any, but I think that that would be one that I would support.
And I certainly think that it would be valid to have some educational opportunities for residents, students, because I can just think back when I was kind of just thrown into it as an attending, had no background, no understanding of how the system works at all. And it was really, really terrifying as a clinician. I mean, I even did overnight call and covered the whole entire prison. So I think it might be an interesting concept to bring forward, that it's not only about educating the people who are reentering, but it's very important to educate the clinicians, and it's a dual interaction. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the women's health concerns and what you've seen. So I want you to talk about, you know, sexual health or sexual abuse. Is it addressed in a comprehensive way? Do they have, I understand that they're addressing the gynecological issues, but what about the psychological issues? What about the counseling? What about healthy relationships? How is that addressed?
If I said to you that there are services in the prison system, I would only be giving half of the answer, because this is another area that we should address, Michael, and that is the prison environment itself is one that is really not conducive to good mental health. And when you think about an incarcerated individual's lifestyle, that person really has no say over anything in terms of what they're eating, what time they're sleeping until, whether they have privacy even to use the restroom and bathe. For women, if they have heavy menses, how can they address hygiene for themselves, especially, you know, in this type of a scenario, that the individuals who are there as the security are from all walks of life. So there's no privacy, there's no independence at all. And that in itself is traumatic. Then when we top it with the trauma that many of these women experience. So let's look at it. Up to 90% of incarcerated women have been exposed to violence prior to incarceration. And up to 60%, 50 to 60% have been exposed to sexual abuse. So these women have a history of domestic violence, childhood abuse, as well as economic marginalization, many other traumas, so that they're going to have substance abuse, mental illness, personal victimization that are so high. And so what we like to, you know, categorize it as pre-incarceration trauma that many of these women have from childhood to adult, and the prison incarceration trauma or the incarceration-based trauma. So that there are many areas that even if we address them, which they are being addressed, that the environment itself is very traumatic. And we have to address that as well. But we are addressing the history of the violence and the trauma and providing intervention for the anxiety, for the depression, for the post-traumatic stress disorder, et cetera, et cetera. And more than half of the 908 women surveyed at the Edna Mahan prison where I am reported that they were the victim of two types of abuse prior to their incarceration: emotional, physical, and or sexual.
Right.
The third reporting having been the victim of all three. So this is very common, and we can provide services, but we have to understand that the prison itself is a traumatic environment.
Right. And we talked a little bit about the STIs and their risk as well, and how that factors into choice of contraception and what have you. Whether we want to agree or disagree, very often there is a lot of sexual activity, even within the prison system, in the prison walls, not only between inmates, but sometimes, you know, there's other facets that are going on, whether it's conjugal or whether there's other partners that are involved. So I think the issue of STIs and a patient population at risk is really important, and we see that all the time. And I used to see that all the time in the when I was working in the prison as well. What about this transition for routine gynecological care and screening? I mean, I think that, you know, I think health prevention really is a luxury. You know, our system has typically focused on illness, right? It's typically focused on treating after the fact, rather than, routine care about preventative care, health, nutrition, diet, exercise, safer sex, what have you. Do they get any, is there any formalized educational programs that you know about either locally or nationally that help with educating people about staying well and maintaining their wellness, not only while in prison, but after they are they have reentry?
Before we get to that, Michael, I would like to go back to the sexual wellness question.
Yes, sure.
And that is that we've totally ignored the sexuality of individuals when they're put into an incarceration environment, and that we give them no outlets, that, for conjugal visits, I believe that there's only a few states, I think California, Connecticut, Mississippi, maybe New Mexico, New York, Washington allow for conjugal visits, so that there's really no focus on sexual wellness for the incarcerated individuals. And as you said, a lot of the sexuality that occurs in a prison system may be unwanted by one of the participants, so that it's not mutual in many instances. And I think that really is an aspect of overall wellness that has to be addressed in the prison system, the sexual needs of an individual, as well as the nutritional needs and the physical activity needs. And as we're talking now, the preventive health needs, and what do you need to continue to be healthy? So that's another area that I think we have to focus on and make sure that we're not closing our eyes to the fact that incarcerated individuals really have no opportunity and little privacy to fulfill, to satisfy their sexual needs. And that is something that should be addressed as well. Now, in terms of education, again, because there are no templates, there really are no standardized educational opportunities or services that those who are going to the prison for taking care of screening, or if the prisoners are leaving for health, for abuse, for HIV, that it's really dependent on the individuals who are providing the health and wellness care for most of the education that I'm aware of in the prisons. And as I said, there are initiatives that have been begun that also do the education. As I said, the Federal Bureau of Prisons does have now the Reentry Services Division with Women and Special Populations. And so they do provide to federally incarcerated women national guidance, on education and intervention programs and management and so forth. But I think this is another area where the educational needs of incarcerated individuals does have to be focused on in a more proactive manner rather than in a passive manner, that if I, Gloria Bachman, provide, the individual with the need for diabetes screening and I forget about it with one and I give it to another, that's inconsistent care, that the education of why one needs to be screened for diabetes has to occur, the education for all individuals, not just the ones that I bring up the topic with.
Right. Well, while we were talking, I kind of did a quick search, and there is a National Commission on Correctional Healthcare, and you can get certified.
Yes.
I think that's the first step for clinicians, is to become aware. I really want to thank you, Gloria. And before we conclude, I just wondered if you had any kind of long-lasting remarks. For me, I think it's really important. We really need to think about, access, reentry, continued care, and continued uninterrupted care. and, you know, the multi-faceted use of contraception in this specific population is not only just for pregnancy prevention. There's a lot of gynecological benefits that may be the reason and the rationale for using contraception and many different types of contraception at different times in the same patient. So I think we need to really look at the patient in totality, the pre-issues, the underlying medical concerns, the at-risk medical illnesses, whether it is for abuse or STIs, and as well as the continued care and access thereafter. So any closing remarks before we conclude this really interesting topic of discussion?
I think the one other point is that when we do care for reentry individuals, and that reentry individual comes with a significant other, that be sure that you give that that patient who has been incarcerated time with you, the provider, because many times, as we've already discussed, there is intimate partner violence, there's domestic violence that may have been the trigger for that woman doing something that put her into the prison system, the incarceration system. So I would encourage every clinician for every patient to give them time with you alone to be sure that they can talk freely about the traumatic events, because the person who is with them may be the person who is causing or allowing the trauma to occur.
Well, Gloria, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. I'm Dr. Michael Critchman, and I want to thank Dr. Gloria Bachman for her time and insight.
Thanks for listening to this episode of
Prison Healthcare.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts,
reentry
Spotify,
programs,
or
and contraception for the prison healthcare patient. So thanks, Gloria. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.